Right, we will move on. 26, we're going to take a look at the AIS Field Operations Plan for 2023. I believe we have Jake. Jake, there's Jake. Welcome, Jake.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. So what I'll be sharing with the group this morning is going to be the 2023 GFP operation plan. I'm trying to share my screen. Looks like somebody needs to disable it so that the host needs so I can screen share. Nick, I'm getting that the host has disabled participant screen sharing right now.
They should be letting you in.
All right.
There you go, Jake. You should have it.
Yep. Thanks, buddy. Hopefully that's popping up there.
Yep. We can see.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. So again, this morning I'll be covering this operation plan. Now, if the commission remembers, I was in front of this body in December to talk about the updated GFP strategic AIS plan, and this operational plan was a portion of that. But I did want to take a few minutes to start this presentation by covering some of the information that we talked about in the strategic plan, but primarily to help tell the story of aquatic invasive species, not only in South Dakota, but basically where they, what it took to get them to South Dakota. So just to kind of cover again, aquatic invasive species are plants, fish, and invertebrates that are introduced into a water body that they're not originally native to. And additionally, they have negative consequences or can have negative consequences for the ecosystem or the recreational uses of that. So that's the big thing there, is something that's been introduced and then has a negative impact. So what I really want to cover too, again, and to help tell the story, I think this is very important when we talk about aquatic invasive species, is, you know, really starting in North America. The really good example we like to use is zebra mussels. And this is, again, this is something I shared in December, but this is a shorter version of it. But I think it's really impactful. And it's very important that we discuss this, because what's happened in the past does impact how we approach AIS in South Dakota. Big thing is, in North America, and this continues to today, species continue to be introduced, and those species continue to spread once they become established. Zebra mussels are going to be the big kind of showcase for this. This data here is USGS data. It's a distribution map. So the first one is 1986. You can see the introductions into the Great Lakes. This came through transoceanic ships, ballast water that was taken up in Europe, essentially, brought over. That ballast water was then dumped so those ships could take on their cargo load and go back, but there's species that came across in that water and became established. So zebra mussels are the one we're looking at. That red line, that vertical line, is going to be our western edge. And so that's 1986, and let's fast forward to 2022. We've seen significant spread in North America. And I've kind of got some vertical lines there from 1996. You can look at that as the western edge. And then 2016 and 2022, moving into Colorado, and there's even some outliers in California. But again, very large expansion. So it is important to talk about that when we talk about AIS in South Dakota, because in many cases, it originated somewhere else. Also, just focusing on the Midwest, these are our neighboring states. South Dakota is there, but Minnesota, Iowa, North Dakota, Wisconsin. This is the number of new infestations of zebra mussels per year in each of these states. The big thing to take home here, it's not that important about the numbers. It's just simply that on a given year, there's new infestations that are detected in all these different states. And the important thing, too, is that these states have different levels of approaches, different levels of financial expenditures. In some cases, we're talking millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of staff. In other cases, expenditures might be much smaller, a number of staff much smaller. But if there's one common denominator, it's that this continued spread of AIS happens on an annual basis. So again, I wanted to rehash that. And also talking about South Dakota, we're very fortunate here to have a very abundant amount of resources, aquatic resources. However, it does make things very challenging. When we look at having almost 500 boat ramps in the state, over 10,000 water bodies that are larger than 10 acres, 11 primary entryways with interstates and highways to get into the state, there's just a lot of access areas and ways for folks to access the water in our state, which is fantastic. But when we start talking about either preventing or containing aquatic invasive species, all this comes into play. Just because, again, high amount of access areas, but again, it's a great problem to have from a user standpoint, but it does make an AIS program very difficult. And so with that, we want to be very strategic and realistic with the approach that we put on the ground in a given year. So we did update our strategic plan. This was shared in December. The portions of that that were important are outreach and education. We do feel that this is our primary tool because our goal is to reach every surface water user of the state and provide them with the tools that they can use to implement best management practices. We can't be everywhere all the time, so the hope is that we reach everybody and give them information so that they can put best management practices into practice every time they use a surface water of the state. And this isn't just anglers. This is recreational users. It's irrigators. It's anybody that uses a surface water of the state. We do use regulation and enforcement. We do feel like that's working. In 2022, our plug compliance rate was 96% statewide. We have seen this increase over the years as our outreach and education efforts have expanded. Additionally, we do a lot of detection and monitoring. I'll talk more about that in the operational plan, supporting research, our standard activities and partnerships. Those will all fall into the operational plan. But that 2023 strategic plan, again, was shared with the commission in December. It's on our website. Anybody that wants to access that, it's very available. So to focus on the operational plan, this is something that's similar to our AIS communications plan that's going to be generated on an annual basis. The reason is this is more of when the rubber meets the road. What does our program actually look like in the field for a given year? And we will update these on an annual basis because it will allow us to capture new information and new techniques and just be more reactive to this constantly evolving issue that is aquatic invasive species. So this document itself, again, much shorter than the strategic plan, but it's going to be very pointed. They have objectives, tasks, the timeline, and then the responsibility. And it's going to be specific again for 2023. And in a lot of cases, a lot of actions within this have already occurred. So one of the big things when we talk about field activities for AIS is going to be detecting and monitoring new or already established species. We want to make sure that our distribution maps are accurate, because what that means for us is where we have signage at access points for the public to understand what may be in a water body. Additionally, where our distribution maps are located at sdleastwanted.sd.gov, we want to make sure that those are accurate. So if a user goes to a water body, we want them to know if there's AIS present in it or not. That also helps with some of the activities that we do when we promote clean, drain, dry. So some of the ways that we're going to detect and monitor is we've really got two approaches. One is we can use the passionate public and the users that are out there in South Dakota. We have a lot of folks that want to help us with this effort, and we want to provide avenues for that to happen. One way that we can do this is through partnering with lake associations. We have a lot of folks that are at certain water bodies, whether it's a cabin or a home, and are active with that water body to help us monitor it. I can tell you so far, we've contacted over 30 lake associations this year. We did that last year as well. We provided monitoring devices. And then the big thing, too, is the citizen monitoring. That's the avenue that they can report results. So you can go onto our website, plug in what you saw, the date, the location, and that helps us monitor. Additionally, just anybody in the general public can do that. That is something that is available to any member of the public is through that citizen monitoring. And we have informational videos that talk you through how to use it, that sort of thing. Additionally, we have staff in the field that are conducting lake surveys and stream surveys every year as part of our standard activities. I can tell you for 2023, the hope for staff is to reach 155 approximate water bodies in the state this year. That's going to allow us to build in a few extra activities to our standard survey methods, such as netting, to also monitor for AIS. And I do want to mention that we've done this in the past. However, it may not be as formalized as it will be this year. And again, the hope is that if we're going to have staff already out there conducting fish surveys, spend a little bit extra time, conduct a few other AIS activities, and that helps us with detection and monitoring. And those 155 water bodies, we'll have a really good shotgun blast across the state when we look at where we sample water. Additionally, we have staff in our state parks. And again, we've done this in the past. This year is just probably going to be a little bit more formalized, and we'll capture that data a little bit better and have it archived in a little bit more formal way as well. But again, utilizing our staff that are already in the field and can look for AIS. Additionally, in-person engagement, this is going to be a big portion of it. This would be our watercraft inspection and decontamination stations. So when we have staff in the field inspecting watercraft, last year we had over 18,500 inspections. This is going to be that portion of it. And there's a lot that goes into that. It allows for direct user engagement, so we can educate the public, answer questions in the field, great way to interact with them. Additionally, the things that we look at, such as plug compliance, that helps encourage compliance with regulations. And this is also where our law enforcement comes into play a lot of times, where they will be at the station to help enforce AIS regulations. So we get outreach and education out of it. We get compliance estimates. We also get to encourage compliance through enforcement. So the program that we have for this year is going to be similar to last year. However, it looks like we're going to be able to have a little bit different approach in the Northeast, where we have staff for what we call a roving crew. But otherwise, in Western South Dakota, the primary reservoirs, again, will have access-based, which means that they happen at bull ramps. We will have inspection stations there. On the eastern side, we'll have this roving crew that can be more reactive to user patterns, and additionally maybe a little bit more spontaneous to just show up at a ramp one day and really help with that education. Additionally, our roadside crews in eastern and western South Dakota, with a high amount of water and boat ramps, we do focus on roadside as a way to encounter more users and hopefully impact a number of water bodies versus just one boat ramp with a given station. So that in-person engagement is going to be a big part. We do use the Western Watercraft Inspection application on tablets, so that when that information is collected on site, it's uploaded, that information is available to any other state that's using that Western app. And that allows them to know what our inspectors are seeing in the field, and then vice versa. So that's a good collective program that we've been using for several years now with our Western states. Additionally, I mentioned our surveys that we'll be doing with Standard Fisheries work. One thing that's important too is watercraft are a vector for transport. And the gear that we use is a vector for transport, and water transport is a vector of transport for AIS. So when we're out there in all these water bodies, which a number of them are positive for AIS, we want to make sure that our staff are doing everything they can to not be the ones to transport AIS. And so we have protocols in place that will be used by staff. For example, fish surveys, gear sampling protocol document outlines where the water body is, what species might be in it, and then what the actions are by staff when they're done with a survey to make sure that all the gear is cleaned necessarily before it's applied to another water body, so that we are absolutely not the ones moving AIS. Fish hatcheries, the same thing. We have water bodies that are being stocked with fish that are AIS free, and we want to make sure that we're not moving AIS into that through either raising and stocking a fish from a hatchery, or what we would call trap and transfer from one public water body to the next. Again, gear sampling protocols, hazard analysis plans, we've got chemical bass. The idea, this really outlines for staff, though, the steps that need to happen by them during these activities to ensure that our staff are not the ones moving AIS around. Because, again, we're on a lot of water bodies in the state for a very short time period, and with that, we need to make sure that we're taking the appropriate steps to mitigate any risks. And then also engage interested parties. As I mentioned earlier, we have outlines on how we're going to talk to people and when. We have contacted over 30 lake associations already in 2023. Additionally, we have a lot of communication information that's passed out there, whether that's email, hard copy, such as informational rack cards that are distributed, any number of different ways. And we always include our contact information on that so that we can reach as many people as possible. So if folks want to talk about AIS with us or partner, we try and put that information out there to figure out how to get a hold of us, and then, boy, we are certainly willing to meet. Additionally, I didn't want to cover that there's a group in the Northeast, South Dakota Lakes and Streams Association. We have regularly scheduled meetings with that group just to ensure that constant communication is happening between the members of their association and Game Fish and Parks, because we do have the same goal in mind. And then the last thing I have on there, support AIS research. You talk about the projects that we are supporting in 2023. So here it's just kind of just the cover that we've got one project between GFP and USD, and then five with SDSU. The plan itself will further outline what those projects are looking at, and that will be updated on an annual basis as we support that AIS research in the state. Additionally, there's a lot of work that happens outside of our state, and we always want to make sure that we're aware of that information and make it as useful as possible for South Dakota when we look at our actions. So kind of a quick coverage of what's in the operational plan, but again, the big take home is this is going to be what we see for the program in 2023, be updated for 2024, but again, fits the framework of the strategic plan. And with that, we're always partnering with other states that clean, drain, dry is the message that we carry, but it's also a message that is carried by a lot of other states. It's really the best way we can find to slow the spread of AIS, not only in South Dakota, but around us as well. And with that, I'd be more than happy to take any questions.
Any questions from the commission? Commissioner
Locken. Jake, Commissioner Locken here. Did I understand you to say you use a chemical bath when you're sanitizing the department's equipment when you're moving from place to place?
Yeah, through the chair, yes. Commissioner Locken, yeah, and it depends on what we're dealing with, for example. One example that I'll provide for a chemical bath would be a way that we would decontaminate stream sampling equipment in the Black Hills. Aquatic invasive species there would include things like guinea mole. And so what we would do with waders is put them in a chemical bath with, I'm trying to remember what the chemical is here. Either way, a sterilant. But the idea is that it sits in that equipment sits in that bath overnight so that anything that would be on that equipment is then sterilized before it being in another stream. As far as transporting fish, the protocol is called the Edwards treatment. But again, a chemical is added to the tanks of fish during transport. And the idea there is that it would kill any mussel veligers that may be floating in that water, but it doesn't kill the fish itself. So again, depending on what the gear is or the practice that's being used, it would be a different, say, chemical process. But the idea is that there's still a chemical bath process in place that we can utilize to, again, minimize that risk, essentially eliminate the risk that we're transporting AIS.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Jake?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner White.
Okay, Commissioner White here. Jake, a number of presentations back, you had a listing of other states on how the AIS is increased, but it looked to me then that that Wisconsin has decreased. And I was wondering, are they doing anything different than the other states, or is it just that they haven't had as much exposure?
Through the chair, Commissioner White, every year I'd say is different for all these neighboring states. And one thing that, I mean, each state is different as far as the number of resources they have and the approach that they put into the field. And so it's hard to say that X, and that's probably been the big take home is that, for example, with these states, there's been no threshold established as far as how much money it takes to eliminate any new infestations. There hasn't been any threshold established for number of inspections that need to happen before anything happens. I will say that it's not Wisconsin, but Minnesota, I believe, had 34 new infestations last year, and their program was millions of dollars, thousands, hundreds of thousands of inspections. And so it's really hard to say that there's any one thing that dictates what the number of new infestations will be, just because it is a very dynamic issue. It's driven by users, and so because of that, it can really be hard to say that one state is, say, winning the battle versus another, because there's a lot of cases, no correlation.
All right. Thank you. I just noticed that, and I thought I'd just ask the question. Thank you.
Commissioner Beast, did you have a question?
No.
Secretary Rubland?
Yeah, Jake, thanks for the presentation. Real quick, how do the commissioners on the AIS task force get more involved in these discussions? We have Commissioner Bartling, Commissioner Whitmire, Commissioner White that are on that work group. Can you just kind of elaborate how you see them fitting into these conversations with the public and staff?
Absolutely, Secretary. I think the best way is certainly helping us be a conduit with those working groups that you're on, and then whatever information that is needed for them, and provided that ways that we can justify the actions that we're taking, but additionally helping us reach those already really any interested parties so that we can help spread the message of clean, drain, dry.
Jake, one more question for you. Early this fall, we sat in on a meeting with some folks from a lake association, very engaged, wanting to take part kind of along the lines of the citizen monitoring. Are we starting to see people sign up and they're preparing for their volunteerism and to get going once folks are out on the water this spring?
Madam Chair, I would say that we've certainly seen some interest. For example, partnering with Lake Ponset for some signage with that lake association. We're meeting in 1 week with Pickerel Lake. We've had conversations with Enemy Swim. I've had several others reach out to me and said that they've distributed the information we sent to their membership. We are going to be having follow-up phone calls with all those lake associations as well, just to make sure there's no barriers to communication or participation. So in some cases, we get a response, and others, we do not.
And then a follow-up. You had mentioned if they see something, they can go online and input that information. Are they given an iPad or anything, or is this something simple they can just do on their cell phone?
Madam Chair, it is something that they can just do on their cell phone through SD Least Wanted. Additionally, too, what we put out there is if you want to contact the Game Fish and Parks office, just if you see something that looks out of the ordinary, and we do get a number of reports every year. We follow up with those staff, with those members of the public. I can tell you last year that there were a handful of instances I can think of where a member of the public called and we sent staff out to investigate that same day or the following day.
And one last question, and I apologize if this is a silly question, but we talked about this being a user, users aren't complying and they're part of the spread, they're the cause of the spread. Do we know if the zebra mussels can be transported by a bird or an animal? We see all these flocks of geese coming through right now. Is that possible?
Madam Chair, it absolutely can be what we call a vector of transport. Waterfowl being one that folks always tend to talk about. One thing that's important to note, especially when we talk about zebra mussels, the primary way that they're transported might be juveniles that would then attach to, say, a duck or something. This time of year when they're migrating, we don't have reproduction occurring by those mussels, so the likelihood that they're going to encounter anything is probably low. However, it could happen at some point in the year, but when we look at the pattern of spread east to west, it doesn't follow traditional flyways. So the thought there is that vector, and when you see those big jumps, if you remember that distribution map, all of a sudden California popped up. Some of those, again, that's going to be driven by watercraft. Now, I will say there was just an article that came out this week that we saw that showed a juvenile zebra mussel attached to a small-bodied fish in the minnow family. So if that's a vector of transport, that could be a big concern as well. So, again, it's constantly evolving. We're trying to stay as up-to-date as we can with that information. But, again, very interesting this week to see a picture of a lake chub with a zebra mussel attached to that fish.
Very interesting. Anything else?
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
Tom Kirschman, Director of Wildlife Division. I just want to go back to your question that Secretary Roebling brought up also about how could the members of the commission on the AIS work group become engaged. As Jake has just been alluding to a couple of times during the presentation, working with the Lakes and Streams Associations, and the various lake associations out there, the Lakes and Streams Association itself is a good conduit to us reaching out to all the various lake associations across the state. We've been working with that group extensively over the last year and a half to 2 years probably. Our last meeting, we came to agreement also that we're going to do a bi-monthly call with them. So I think that would be another venue or an opportunity where the commission members on that work group could be part of those conversations. It's a communication of what's new, what have we learned, where are we at, what progress are we making, what new developments, anything like that. So I think that might be a really nice opportunity for the commission work group members to be on those calls, certainly understand not always going to fit schedules, but we can get you that and put that on your calendar, and if you can join, that would be very helpful, I believe.
Very good. Jake, thank you. Good presentation.